In 2023, private credit continued to attract significant capital despite a slowdown in fundraising and more challenging market conditions, with some of the largest managers increasing their allocations to the sector. McKinsey & Co. data reveals that debt was the most resilient private asset class, posting the highest returns. Last September, Blackstone, one of the largest asset managers, integrated its corporate credit, asset-based finance, and insurance groups into a new single unit called Blackstone Credit & Insurance, also known as BXCI. The asset manager also revealed that its credit and insurance segment produced an inflow of nearly $62.5 billion over the course of 2023. But as the market continues to remain challenging, what should be the strategy going forward? And how are managers addressing concerns surrounding the sector? In today's episode, sponsored by Blackstone, PEI Group Special Projects Editor Chase Collum catches up with Michael Zawadzki, Global Chief Investment Officer at Blackstone Credit and Insurance, and Brad Marshall, Global Head of Private Credit Strategies, Chairman and Co-CEO of both the Blackstone Private Credit Fund and the Blackstone Secured Lending Fund in Blackstone Credit and Insurance. They each discuss the wider private credit landscape and how it applies to their firm's strategy going forward.
So BXCI is less than a year old at this point as an organized unit. But Brad and Michael, you have been working together for a little longer than that. Can you walk me through that first?
Sure. So we're coming up on 20 years, I think, at this point. And when we thought about doing credit at Blackstone, one of the most exciting things about doing that is what differentiates you in credit is scale and capabilities. Obviously, the scale is the largest global alternative investment manager, and then the capabilities in terms of the insights we get across our global investing franchise really helps a lot and makes our jobs a lot easier.
Yeah, when we started in 2005 with that $3 billion, as you mentioned, we've always viewed ourselves as capital solution providers. And as we've seen the market evolve over the past 19 years now, we've observed a couple of things. One, from a capital raising standpoint, and you think about the three buckets, institutions, insurance, and individuals. In each of those areas, we thought about different ways of delivering private credit to those clients that were feeling a need that they were lacking. So for individuals, the 60-40 model didn't work. For institutions, they were starting to develop more dedicated private credit sleeves away from private equity. And insurance, they were looking for longer duration solutions. They were willing to give up illiquidity. So that was a big opportunity set that we've kind of observed and tried to lean into. And then the second thing is, just from a company standpoint, the private solution has been arguably a better solution for them. More flexible, more certainty, just a better, from a private equity investor standpoint, a better solution for their investment thesis.
Sure. So that walks through. I was going to ask you about the opportunity set. Thank you. That sounds great. And so now the private debt market, let's talk about that market in particular. How have you seen that evolving over the course of your careers?
Sure. I can start. I know this is a podcast, but if this was a visual presentation, Z and I would show a chart that we have in our marketing material that shows the evolution of private credit. Starts with this caveman, and then it goes through the Renaissance period, the modern age, and it evolves to this walking human being that's dressed very nicely. But what we've seen in this asset class is, of course, the scale solutions have gotten bigger. The types of companies that we finance have gotten much, much larger. But we've also seen the asset class itself broaden to beyond just below investment grade, kind of private credit, to investment grade, to asset base, to more structured equity solutions. So it's this journey that we've been on that's really accelerated over the past couple of years, but we think has a lot more room to run.
Yeah, and I might just double click on the point around the quality of the business, because I think back when we first started, the types of businesses that were looking for a private solution, they were smaller, they might be a little off the run. They generally were companies that the banks didn't want to finance. And so now some of the biggest and best companies in the world are coming to us, and the private markets for capital, it's faster, it's more flexible, you know your partner. That is such a dramatic difference and really allows us to create just incredible portfolios for our clients of these high quality businesses.
Let's talk about the present now. What do you see as the key factors that are contributing to the growth of private credit, as a significant component of the broader financial landscape?
Well, one thing that's nice and we didn't touch on is most of the 20 years we've been doing this, we've been swimming upstream in a near zero rate environment. So One of the very obvious things is we are in a higher base rate regime, which means a higher return environment for credit. Credit as an asset class is more competitive, higher returning relative to other things investors can put in their broader portfolio. So I think that's foundational. And then if you think about the supply and demand equation for credit, I talked about a piece of it, right? There are all of these borrowers who now are saying, I want to go to the private markets for capital. It's faster. It gives me more certainty. These lenders can be more flexible, can help add value to my company. And so that's one piece of it, the demand piece for private capital. And then on the other side, you have investors who are seeing this higher return opportunity. They are seeing the asset class generate not just strong performance, but low volatility, low losses over a long period of time. And they're wanting to allocate more to the asset class as well. So you have those two factors happening at the same time. That's really fueling a lot of the growth we're seeing.
Yeah, if you think about it, you know, what you're seeing with this evolution that we were talking about earlier, you know, private credit is now a more efficient way to deliver capital to companies. So think about the old kind of model where you had a bank that underwrote the capital, had to go through a rating, they had to go through a long roadshow to market and sell down that debt at an uncertain price. Now companies can go directly to lenders like ourselves, bypass that, you know, cumbersome process, and as he mentioned, get a more flexible, customized solution.
Let's switch gears a bit here. Let's talk about misconceptions in private credit. Some people think of it as being just about traditional LBO financing. How do you define private credit, and what does it look like here at Blackstone?
We're going to be referencing this chart that Brad alluded to a few times in this discussion, because I think you're right. In the Middle Ages, or whenever that chart begins, a lot of people thought about private credit as just middle market LBO finance. That's what we were doing when we started 20 years ago. But what's happened over the last 20 years, you've seen it expand to all of these different asset classes. And so when we think about private credit, it's really just providing a bespoke bilateral solution, financing solution to a borrower. That could be investment grade, it could be sub-investment grade, it could be senior, it can be junior, it can be corporate credit, it can be asset-backed credit, it can be real estate credit. Really, we probably have over a dozen distinct private credit asset classes within Blackstone, and our goal is to bring the full solution suite across the full spectrum of the credit markets to both our borrowers and our investors.
Great. So there's also this narrative that suggests that the hype around private credit is overblown. Maybe there might be some sort of systemic risk. What's your take on this? Do you believe the headlines might be missing something around that?
There's a couple things I'd say. Number one, I think we're missing just the fundamental quality of the assets. And I spoke about how high quality the types of companies we have access to are, but also the setups of these capital structures. If you look in our direct lending businesses, which is where we write first lien loans to these companies, we're at 40% loan to value. If you go back to, again, referencing back where we started, you'd often see these deals at 65 to 70% loan to value. So you're at a more conservative part of the capital structure. You have higher quality businesses. That means that our capital is much more insulated against loss today. And that gives us a lot of conviction. And you're seeing that across our portfolio. We've got 4,000 borrowers at Blackstone. And I think part of that comes to how we underwrite, right? Private due diligence gives us, you know, differentiated access to these companies. We have capabilities at Blackstone that can help these companies grow their revenue, take costs out. We've got a bunch of operating partners to support these businesses. And so we're making the investment, we're doing deep due diligence, and then we're supporting those companies. All of that results in really high and defensible credit quality in these portfolios.
Yeah, the only thing I would add to that, Chase, is that if you look at the types of funds that we manage, they themselves are only about 1x levered max. Some of them are unlevered. And as you compare that to CLOs, as you compare that to banks, they're closer to 10x leverage or more. So I think the structure in the private markets, it's much better suited for long-term holders.
I just want to throw something in here. Defaults, okay? It's something interesting to me. I've been hearing a little bit about, you know, defaults look different in the private credit industry as well than they would necessarily on the CLO side. Because I think, like, when someone defaults and they have private credit, they have a private equity sponsor, there's a lot of skin in the game to keep that company afloat. Is it right to say that defaults look different in private credit than they do in the broader market?
I might say recoveries are what might look very different, right? Because it's one thing to have a credit default on you. It's another thing to say, okay, how much money do you lose when that happens? And I do think in private credit, you have a couple of good things going for you. Number one, you're right. You have better alignment between the lender and the owner. Oftentimes, it's a bilateral transaction. And so you can work out a way to help solve the company. The second thing is, as a lender, we can help support that business. We can help it with new capital if that's needed. We can help it with operating support if that's needed. And you can do that in a bilateral private deal in a way that sometimes you can't do in a big, clubbed up, syndicated public situation. And the last thing I would say is, in the office of the CIO here, we have close to 80 people, and what that group does in large part every day is mining our portfolio, mining those 4,000 credits and looking for trends. Sometimes those trends lead us to our next investment. Sometimes those trends lead us to be more protective around a situation so we can get in there early and support that business if we see problems coming down the road. And so all of those capabilities and that access you have in private credit is different from what you might see in the public markets. And that's why this question of default, I often turn around and talk about losses and recoveries, because ultimately that's what's going to drive performance for our portfolios.
Yeah, the clear advantage with private credit is you can have that conversation across the table. One investment committee on our side, in 80% of Blackstone's deals, we're the sole or lead lender. So it's very easy for us to decide internally what we want to do when a company is facing duress. Very different than the public markets. Investors may be buying at 50 cents, at 60 cents. Some may own it at par. So behaviors are driven by your basis most often. So you're just going to lead to a better, longer-term solution for the company, to Z's point, which will help you minimize losses in the event of that default.
Okay, at this point, I think it's worth taking a moment to talk about the synergies between private credit and insurance, given the integration of these businesses at Blackstone. Now, you talked about this a little bit at the beginning of our conversation here. So what was the impetus for joining these businesses, and how does it all work together?
I think it goes back to just leveraging the scale of our franchise, which is just a huge differentiator for us. We believe that differentiates us not just with our borrowers, but with our investors. When we show up in front of a client who's looking to borrow money from us, having the full suite of solutions from investment grade all the way down to sub-IG and across all of our different asset class verticals, that allows us to be a true solutions provider. Brad mentioned, like, when we started in 2005, that was the goal. It's a lot more fun now because we have even more tools in our toolkit to be that solution provider. And then I would say for our investors, they're similarly looking at ways to build broader relationships with their GPs. And so finding ways to provide solutions for our investors across the full spectrum of what we do, putting credit and insurance together, makes that process really seamless.
And in what ways does BXCI differentiate itself in the private credit market, particularly as this one-stop shop for your clients?
All right. I'll try and make this not sound like a marketing pitch. but listen, I think a couple things at Blackstone that we put a lot of effort and thought into and where we think we have some real differentiation relative to our peers. First is around data. And if you think about Blackstone as a platform, we own and operate hundreds of companies. In credit, we're invested in 4,000 companies. So our access to information, in my view, is unparalleled. It helps us identify trends. It helps us get fairly good insights into where the economy's headed. For example, we have something that we call our CEO survey, where we survey CEOs across our business units. And that gives us a really good insight, not to where we've been, but where we're going. Where are wages headed? Where's hiring? Where are margins? What's your likely CapEx spend in the upcoming year? Those insights are really valuable if you think about our assessment of where we think inflation is going to land for the year and how we structure some of our deals. The second thing is scale. And scale is often thought of, you know, dollars, how big of a check you can write. We think about it in many different ways. One of it is scale of resources. So this group finds different ways across the Blackstone franchise to add value to the companies that we invest in after we make the investment. So it could be procurement, it could be data science team, it could be cybersecurity. But we're trying to lend this massive infrastructure that we have in place to the advantage of the companies that we lend to, which we think is very, very unique in the credit space.
Great. And let's dig into investment strategy for a moment to the degree that we can in this forum. Something we've heard from Blackstone is that in private credit, successful investors could deliver equity-like returns with debt-like risk. What are the successful investors today doing right to achieve those returns?
The investor base has kind of shifted a little bit. In 2021, where rates were near zero, our investor base was really, you know, people looking for a yield. You had 80% of the market that was yielding less than 2%, and they were looking to give up some liquidity to get, you know, higher returns. Today, with rates being high, you're seeing a different rotation. You're seeing more equity investors rotate into private credit because of the expected volatility that higher rates may bring. So it's a little bit of a different shift from 2021 to today, but nonetheless, very strong demand for private credit. And I would say, at least in my travels, investors are looking for a couple of things. One, we lived in this environment where there hasn't been a lot of credit dispersion. Default rates have been fairly benign. So they're looking for platforms with a lot of operational capabilities. So whether it's your ability to go in, own, operate, and rebuild a business in the event of default, or are there ways that you can add value such that the company doesn't default? So that's, you know, number one focus, I think, for investors. The second thing I would say is they're looking for more private products beyond just direct lending, being you think about that as the core allocation for most investors in private credit. So they're looking for asset base. So they're looking for investment grade. They're looking to take advantage of the illiquidity premium you can get more broadly now.
The only thing I would add is in this return environment that we're speaking about for credit, where base rates are high, spreads are wide, focus on quality. There's no need to reach for yield. And across all the various asset classes that Brad highlighted, our rule, every investment committee discussion, we just got one recently, how do we not lose money? Let's make sure we're preserving investor capital because of the dynamics we're in today. High base rates, high spreads, that's a great environment for credit. Just got to make sure you're disciplined in your underwriting and you're finding differentiated deal flow to provide to our clients.
I'd love to zoom into this concept a little bit more. What are some areas you think are attractive to deploy capital today and some other focus areas that you're going to be looking at in 2024?
Well, I might just pick on that theme. All right, so how do we think about preserving capital, not losing money? For us, we have this saying, it's a little bit cheesy, but it's the three S's. Right? And the three S's are scale, seniority, and sectors. And so any investment discussion we have, regardless of what strategy it's in, for us is, okay, let's focus on scale. We're seeing the bigger businesses be more resilient. If you look at the average cash flow of the companies we've invested in the last year, it's about $200 million of EBITDA. Those companies have good pricing power. They're more resilient against an uncertain investment environment. So scale would be the first S. The second would be seniority. And I measure seniority by loan to value. Okay, how much junior capital do you have beneath us? In our senior secured strategies, we have 40% loan to value on average. Even in our junior capital strategies, we have north of 50% equity cushions beneath us. And so that gives us a huge margin for error. And the third thing is sectors. You know, we have a strong bias at Blackstone towards faster growing, more recession resilient, high free cash flowing sectors. Areas like software, life sciences, energy transition, business services. Those have been great places for us to deploy, but they're also a place where we have dedicated expertise both within the credit team and at Blackstone more broadly to drive our activity in those areas.
Can we share any recent deal highlights to get a sense of what you're looking for when you talk about these three S's?
Well, maybe I'll start. And it's beyond just the three S's, but we really try and lean into our incumbency where we know companies, we know the management teams, we know the sponsors. We know how the company's performed in good periods and bad periods. So the value of incumbency is a luxury that not a lot of platforms have, but being invested in 4,000 credits globally is one that we benefit from. So businesses that have that incumbency where we can actually provide complete capital solutions, so larger businesses, maybe it's senior, maybe it's junior, maybe it's a little bit of equity as well. If we can be all parts of the capital structure and spread that out across our different strategies, and that's quite valuable. And then the third thing is where we can actually be somewhat strategic to the company. Those three things, if they all line up, are very good opportunities for us and our investors, and they tend to be the larger type business profile. So we financed a company last year called HealthComp. They were buying a company or merging with a company called Virgin Pulse. We were the incumbent lender to HealthComp, so it was a business that we knew quite well. They were looking for a very quick capital solution, one that had a little bit of complexity to it, but a lot of scale. So incumbent, complex, and value add, those would be the hallmark of our franchise.
Great. Something else I'm curious about, and I'd appreciate if you could elaborate on this bit, portfolio management. When I think about value creation, what comes to mind really is private equity, particularly operating partners. You mentioned operating partners earlier. And so BXCI, you offer value creation capabilities to your credit portfolio. Can you tell me a bit more about that?
To me, portfolio management comes down to two things, data and capabilities. So on the data side, again, harvesting this huge universe of companies and seeing what's going on, what sectors are performing well, what sectors are underperforming, and driving our investment activity in that direction. But then the data, just one piece. Once you see something, do you have the capabilities to drive change? And so Blackstone's got 98 operating partners that we can infuse into these companies to help support them. We've got a group purchasing organization that we have at Blackstone where we can plug the companies we lend capital to into, and they can save money on things like health insurance and shipping costs. We've created over $3 billion of value through these programs in our credit portfolio alone since inception. And I think that is something that, again, when people go down the path of choosing private capital, they're choosing a partner. And we want this to be a piece of why they decide to partner with Blackstone.
And to give you one more stat around that, 90% of the companies we offer this program to use it. So many people think there's, you know, we're just the credit investors and that we don't have a lot to value to provide, but 90% of them use it in some form or fashion.
That's really interesting. Maybe we need to dive a bit more into what operating partners are doing on the credit side and why that's a big opportunity for credit investors, but that's a different podcast. So let's move on. Let's look at the future here. Given the recent thaw in M&A activities and the observation of healthy macro fundamentals, how do you anticipate these factors will shape the credit market in 2024?
Yeah, we talk about this a lot. You know, we've been expecting the markets to pick up for some time. 2021 was an incredibly busy year because rates were low, valuations were robust, financing was available. Fast forward to today, rates are high. And so it's harder to get certain transactions to work from an equity standpoint. Having said all that, it does feel like valuations are getting a little bit closer together. Cost of capital is coming down a little bit, and private equity sponsors are more motivated than they were maybe last year to put capital to work. They also have fund structures that, you know, kind of force them to be active at some stage. And so in all the conversations we're having with advisors, with private equity sponsors, they all expect to be busy, which is a good sign, but one that is taking a little bit longer to actually materialize.
Thanks for that. And as we start to wrap up the conversation, much as I'd like to keep going, what are the key trends and developments you're most excited about in the private credit space? And maybe not just in 2024, but in general.
Maybe I'll hit two that are top of mind, and we've touched on each of them so far on this conversation. But one would just be the expansion of the opportunity set, right? We've seen senior secured direct lending grow into a very large and meaningful asset class, but we're at the early innings of a lot of these other asset classes that we spoke about, whether it's asset-backed finance. I think there's a huge opportunity in opportunistic credit, more junior in the capital structure, private investment grade we spoke about. We're just hitting the tip of the iceberg. There's a $25 trillion addressable market out there for us. And so that is one thing that I'm incredibly excited about. And then dovetailing with that is developing the solutions for our client base, whether it be institutional, insurance, high net worth, finding the right solutions for them, the right fund structures, the right multi-asset accounts to the extent that's of interest to deliver the capabilities and the growth we're seeing across all these different verticals within our business.
Yeah, I'm not sure what that chart, the evolution chart, will look like over the next 5 years, but I agree with Z that this is probably the most exciting time in private credit that we've seen in the past 20 years, just given all the momentum, not just on the corporate side, but on the asset-based side. not just in the U.S., but globally. The asset class is fully maturing and investors are embracing it in allocating more capital across the board.
Last question, guys. What advice would you give to investors or companies looking to engage more deeply in the private credit market?
I heard a stat the other day, there's something like 1,200 private credit managers. So I think really focusing on core areas of differentiation and the resources to support a differentiated outcome for their capital.
And I would just echo that. I think the suggestion I give would be don't look backwards, look forwards. So in the next 5 years, what's going to allow a manager to be successful? Do they have their own origination capabilities? Do they have some of the portfolio management and value creation capabilities we spoke about? Are they seeing a big enough portion of the market to know where the best values and opportunities sit? And so, you know, I think if you look backwards, that's one thing, but I would strongly encourage folks to think about the next 5 years, what's going to be different and who do I want to partner with to capitalize on that?
That's great. I mean, you know, you hear it now a little bit more that the last, say, 15 years were not normal. That the zero interest rate environment, that wasn't what normal looks like. So maybe we'll see a new normal. God forbid I use that phrase, but
well, interest rate cycles tend to be long. The last two have been between 35 and 40 years, and we're in year two of this one. So we'll see where it goes from here.
Well, everybody get out your walking sticks because we're here in year two of how many years did you just say? Yeah, we've got a few to go.
I've gone from early innings to spring training over the course of watching this play out. And I just think that the tail here is going to be long. People ask us about dry powder a lot. It's still a fraction of the dry powder that you see in private equity and other markets. And so we're excited about where this goes.
And so are we. Thanks so much to Brad and Michael for joining us today. And hopefully we'll have this conversation again in a few years and you can tell me all about what you've been up to.
That again was Special Projects Editor Chase Collum speaking with Blackstone's Michael Zawadzki and Brad Marshall. If you liked what you heard, be sure to subscribe, rate and review wherever you listen to podcasts. And head to privatedebtinvestor.com to learn more about the themes that shaped today's conversation. Thanks for listening.